This is the Larry Miller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. We're talking about caring for adult teeth with our guest, Dr. Patrick Teep. He is the immediate past president of the Wisconsin Dental Association and a general dentist with Associated Dentists in Verona. What would you like to know about dental care for adults? Are you thinking of getting braces? Well, join us by calling 800-642-1234, or you can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Teep, are you there?
I am. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
You bet. Well, you know, it does seem like we get a lot of education on dental care when we're kids, but does that info pertain to when we're adults too?
Well, I think some things do. Like a lot of things, you know, we'll focus on getting good preventive education for kids because we want to start good habits early. You know, if children get used to the habit of brushing their teeth twice a day or trying to work in a flossing routine and eating and drinking the right things, that certainly is going to really set the stage for as they get older. And hopefully we'll remember a number of those things as they become adults.
Right. Well, are the teeth themselves different as an adult than a child?
They are. There are a variety of differences from baby teeth to adult teeth. Generally speaking, baby teeth are obviously smaller. The nerve in the baby teeth are generally larger than what we see in adult teeth. And of course, baby teeth are generally not with us quite as long. So, you know, the average child probably has lost their baby teeth by the time they're 12 years old in that range. Obviously, then adult teeth that come through, you know, our expectation or hope is that they're going to be there for the rest of their life. So those teeth may certainly need to last us 70 plus years beyond that, 70, 80, 90 years.
So you said that children's teeth, the nerve is bigger than adult?
It is. So if you were, you know, from our perspective as dentists, if you ever had the opportunity to look at dental x-rays or to ask your dentist to look at x-rays, if we look at a baby tooth and with a dental x-ray, what I call the cavity detecting x-rays or the bite wing x-rays, mm-hmm. It allows us to kind of look from the side of teeth and we can see the main part of the nerve. Dentists call that the pulp. And that nerve space is proportionally quite a bit bigger in baby teeth. And the way that's significant is that a smaller cavity will actually be more of a concern in a baby tooth than it might be in an adult tooth. Of course, any cavity we worry about and any cavity we want or any decay we'd like to have repaired because it eventually, if ignored, will become a problem. But on a baby tooth, the same size cavity that may be very, very small on an adult tooth could compromise that tooth more on a baby tooth.
Interesting. I never would have guessed that. What about how often should we actually go to the dentist? Because I've heard, oh, once a year is fine. And then I hear, oh, you have to go twice a year. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, that's a good question. And it's not a super straightforward answer because the truth is it depends upon your risk and the individual's risk. Folks that have a very good positive dental history, meaning they've had a history of very, very few or no tooth decay in their lifetime. We're speaking of adults, of course. Mm-hmm. Those that have a very low history of tooth decay, they're good brushers and flossers. They take care of their teeth well. They might be able to do fine with once a year. Those that have had a history of dental decay or those that have a history of periodontal or gum disease, they definitely need to go more often than that.
Okay.
So it may be a more appropriate at that point for every 6 months. We have some patients that have very active periodontal disease or gum disease. They may need to come to the dentist every 3 months.
Wow. Okay. Well, we did have a question emailed in from Anne in Madison. It kind of pertains to this. She says, if there are no symptoms of dental problems, is it okay to push routine dental cleanings out until after the pandemic is over or under control?
Sure. And, you know, and that's another good question that the answer is not as straightforward as it may seem.
Yeah.
And, yes, of course. And and I think the reason for that is that a very common misconception among folks is well, everything feels fine, so it must be okay. And the unfortunate thing is that many early dental problems don't cause symptoms. And that can be a challenge because you don't know that the problem is there. So for someone, for example, that has been coming to the dentist regularly before the pandemic, and if they know that they have had a good dental history in the past, they haven't had much tooth decay, they don't have much periodontal or gum disease, and they know that there aren't things that the dentist maybe necessarily has been keeping their eye on, then they probably can push things back during that pandemic for a period of time. There are some people that are in higher risk categories, maybe older adults, or maybe they have underlying health conditions, that it may be better for them to delay some preventive treatment for a period. But if they are having symptoms, or they know that they have a history of periodontal disease from the past, those would be ones I would call their dentist and ask and see what that dentist's what their thoughts are.
Okay, great. And speaking of COVID-19, obviously that's affected your business as it has affected so many others. What should patients be looking for to feel safe when they go to the dentist?
Yeah, absolutely. I think people are going to notice a number of differences. The Wisconsin Dental Association has provided quite extensive guidance to our members as to how should they prepare their offices and prepare their staff for patients to return. So, you know, the first thing is if you have any hesitation, I would encourage to call your dental office and ask them. But what should patients expect? They should expect that they're going to get some COVID screening questions, probably at the time when their appointment is made. When they come to the office, they should expect they're probably going to have their temperature taken, probably most commonly a no-touch type, a temporal scanner type temperature taken. They're going to have those COVID screening questions probably asked again, because what may have been accurate a couple of days ago or a week ago or more when an appointment was made, that may have changed. They're going to notice that the waiting rooms are quite a bit different. You're going to notice often chairs are spaced out so they can try to maintain social distancing. You're going to notice more liberal use of hand sanitizers encouraged right at the front desk. Many offices may have patients check in from their car, and they may even send someone out to pick them up from their car when the time is to come in. And that's to try to have less interaction, not only with other patients, but even with other staff, less time in the waiting room or less interaction. Right now, currently, you know, in some areas, especially here in Dane County where I am, you know, we're under a mask order. And so, you know, many dental offices were highly encouraging folks to wear face coverings even before this week. Now that's obviously even more prominent. And I would highly encourage folks to do that. You know, we wear go ahead.
No, go right ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, we wear our face coverings and masks not just for our own protection, for those other that are around us as well.
Absolutely. And just as an FYI, we are going to be talking with two experts in masks on the second part of our show, which starts at 11:45. So you can stick around and get more info on that. Do you recommend if we do go to our dentist and some of those things you talked about are not being done, should we just leave and wait?
You know, that's always that's something that's easy to say, but it's an uncomfortable situation,
right?
Isn't it? You know, my suggestion would be is ask. You know, ask. You can ask if it's something that you notice at the front desk. You can ask that front desk person if it's something. As you get back into the treatment room, you can ask your dental hygienist or ask the doctor that, hey, I've heard about, you know, the dentists are doing this and I see that you aren't, and ask them. I think it's important for us to be good consumers. Although there's guidance that's distributed and highly encouraged, they're not necessarily mandates. And I think that the overwhelming majority of dentists, of course, are putting, you know, the safety of our patients and the safety of our staff and ourselves, for that matter, at the forefront. But if you notice something that, for example, if you notice in an office that no one is wearing face masks, staff, doctor, anything. And I think that's extremely unlikely.
Sure.
But I think I would encourage folks to ask about that.
Mm-hmm. Great advice. And if you have a question for Dr. Teep, why don't you give us a call? Lines are open, 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. So when someone does go in for an annual or a biannual checkup, what are some of the things that they can expect to have done, and what are some of the things that absolutely should be done each time they go in?
Yeah, and so there are a variety of things that are going to notice difference. You know, I was describing before a number of the things that you'll see right when you maybe first walk into the office, things that are at the front desk, things that are in the waiting room. You may have different many offices, I think, will literally mark out on floors maybe X's and lines or arrows for traffic flow to try to keep people more apart, to try to keep social distancing as much as possible. But once you get back into a treatment room, I think many people will notice that that whether it's the dental hygienist or what's with one of the doctor treatment rooms, you may be asked to wash your hands right off the bat or use hand sanitizer. You may be asked to rinse there are a few different, although not mandated rinses, but there are a few different kind of antiviral rinses that some offices may use. The rinses are not something that's required because it does have a limited time effectiveness, but it is something that you may notice, and those are things that would be certainly acceptable to use. You're probably going to notice your provider is maybe wearing different masks than what they're used to. There's a good likelihood you're going to see face shields that are being used. You may see different gowns, possibly, that are being used. A lot of that may depend upon what procedure is being done. You're going to see a lot of those barriers that are different. The disinfection and those things that dentists have always provided, you're not necessarily going to see a difference there because, frankly, dental offices have always had universal precautions and been really at the forefront of disinfection long before COVID even came around.
Absolutely, because it really was. I mean, there was so much stuff that dental offices did to keep everybody safe. So it probably wasn't too much of a step forward for you.
Exactly. A lot of the disinfectants that we were using before are equally effective now. How we do it or how long the rooms may get wiped down to allow some of those disinfectants to work a little bit longer. The coronavirus is different from a lot of things that we would most pay attention to in the past. You know, bloodborne pathogens, things like HIV and hepatitis, are things that we've been dealing with since the early to mid-1980s. And we take universal precautions to help protect all involved from those things. Coronavirus now is transmitted via aerosols or through the air. So we have to change a few things, mm-hmm. but those may not be things that the patient may physically see. But some of the barriers and things that, or some of the masks, the goggles, the face shields, the gowns, maybe a little, those are things that patients probably will notice difference of.
Okay. Well, we're talking with Dr. Patrick Teep. What dental problems are you having? What questions do you have about adult dental care? Join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. After 11:45 today, we're going to learn more about face masks, why they work, and which types are best. That's coming up next on the Ideas Network. But right now, we are talking about dental care for adults. And we do have a call online. Let's go to Joe in Whitewater. Hi, Joe.
Good morning. Thanks for having my call.
You bet. What's your question?
My question is, and I have a periodic appointment coming up here shortly, and I know whenever you go to the dentist that you're not the only patient the dentist is working on. And he will rotate from you back to another that he might be working on and then back to you. My concern is what precautions are they going to take when they're moving between patients and back again?
Great question. Dr. Teep?
Yeah, Joe, that is a really great question. And frankly, that's one of the areas that have really been a challenge for many offices as to how do we coordinate that. Because you're absolutely right, is that often if you're in for a preventive appointment, at some point through that appointment, you know, the doctor is probably coming in to do a periodic exam for you. So what I will tell you, and I can speak most readily for that on like what we're doing in our office, and we've had to change kind of how we schedule certain appointments. There are times where we have to schedule more time to allow for that. There are times where we have to be a little more flexible of when I can come in to do your exam, depending upon what procedure I'm doing for those other patients that we're seeing. And so without getting into overly great detail, what we are finding is we're changing our gowns more often. We, of course, always change gloves for every patient. Sure. And so that's something we always do. But something that wasn't necessarily a habit before COVID is that what was most common is the dentist would have the same gown on often for the entire day, because we weren't worrying about things necessarily that were in the air. Sure. Now we do. Mm-hmm. So now we're seeing that dentists are changing those gowns dramatically more. I mean, often after every patient, depending upon what procedure is being done for that patient. So that, I think, one definite difference you're going to notice is you may notice that the dentist may come in at any point through that preventive appointment, because before they head in to see that next patient that might be nearby, and necessarily then get into a contaminated area, they may come and do your exam before that happens. Because once they then go into a certain procedure, then they have to go through the whole protocol of either disinfecting or being prepared for that.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for that call, Joe. Let's go to Mary in Racine. Hi, Mary.
Yeah, hi. This is not related to COVID, this question.
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Okay, so when I was young, I was about, I don't know if I was 15 or 18, but I had what they said a strong frenal pull, and my gums were pulling back from my teeth. Is that something that needs to be repeated when you're an adult? Because I noticed that seems to be happening again.
Go ahead, doctor.
Yeah, Mary, thank you. That's a good question. You know, what I think you're describing when you talk about gums kind of pulling away from the teeth is what we call recession or gum recession. It's extraordinarily common. I would have to say, in general, it becomes more of a problem with age or with time, but it doesn't have to be. It can happen even in children. It's very individual. There are a number of different causes or things that can contribute to that. So gum recession is something that constantly needs to be monitored. Often the dentist or the dental hygienist might be taking some measurements when you're in for those preventive appointments to check and see, has that recession changed? But there are two different aspects of recession that we worry about as your dentist and dental hygienist. And one are those teeth that have become more sensitive or painful as a result of that recession. And then the other aspect is, has that recession gotten to a point where it now has compromised those teeth? So it's not a matter of that just that you have recession. Is that recession progressing? What's the health of the gum around it? Gums in areas like recession that you're describing, gums that bleed in that area are certainly much more of a concern. So it's something that needs to be monitored. The fact that you have recession, that by itself may not necessarily be a problem depending upon what the degree of that recession is. Do you think that answers your question?
I think so. I just don't want to have to go through another procedure, because they took a graft from another tooth and put it over my eye tooth. And he said the frenal muscles were too strong and they were pulling the gums back.
Yes, exactly. Sometimes they'll do a second procedure to relieve that little frenum that you're describing, to take some of the tension away from that area. The number one advice I would give you for someone that's had, and I've actually had a graft just like what you're describing as well, so I've been there. And the number one piece of advice I would give you is make sure you're using a soft, or my suggestion, an extra soft toothbrush. Remember to, you don't have to brush hard in order to get things clean, because that gum tissue is very thin and very fragile, And if you brush too hard, you can contribute to more of that recession. And that's something we see. You know, we were talking at the beginning of the show today about, you know, things that we learn as kids. And when we, you know, when we learn as kids, learn how to brush our teeth, we're all taught to scrub hard, right? We come to learn that, you know, yes, that gets the teeth clean, but, you know, that scrubbing hard over the course of many years can actually wear away at the teeth or can even potentially damp the gums. And so, you know, as adults, what we need to do is we need to brush, and we need to brush them, you know, thoroughly, but brush them gently. You don't have to scrub hard to get that plaque off.
Okay, I think I'm guilty of that. So thanks, Mary, for that reminder. Let's go to Dan in Milwaukee. Hi, Dan.
Hi, good morning. So my question was, I have a filling that I probably got about 12 years ago, a silver filling in a back molar that has since had a slight crack in it that doesn't need to be tended to right now, but it's coming up in the future that I'll either get a crown put on it. Refilling it would probably just lead to the same thing. And I'm wondering if there's a difference or a benefit to going with a crown or a dental implant.
Yeah, that's a good question. And those are actually, as much as that's an easy question to ask, they're two very drastically different procedures. So my very first response for you is saving the tooth that you have is always better than any replacement. Dental implants are a wonderful replacement option for natural teeth, but they're not 100%. And so anything you can do to save your own tooth is generally worthwhile, unless the condition of that natural tooth is in such poor shape that the overall prognosis or the outlook is poor. So from the way you're describing for me, for what you described to me, keeping and saving your own tooth would clearly be the better option for you versus removing the tooth and doing a dental implant.
And Dr. Teep, there's quite a difference in costs involved too, isn't there?
There is. You know, there are a number of steps that are involved in a dental implant. And dental implants, again, are a wonderful teeth replacement option. It has become the standard of care for replacing an individual tooth. But implants are not 100%. There are some scenarios, or there are folks with certain health conditions where an implant is not an option. So, you know, we certainly want to try to keep what Mother Nature gave us first. And it's if we can't, or if the tooth is not repairable, that's when we look to something like an implant. But you're absolutely right. Dental implants are costly. They are extremely strong. They're long-lasting. They're very, very good and advantageous for, in comparison to, you know, drilling down or working on the natural teeth that may otherwise be healthy. But again, keeping your own tooth is, generally speaking, is the best option for us.
Okay. Thank you, Dan. Let's go on to Bob in Clay Banks. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. Thanks for having this show.
Mm-hmm.
Doctor, I've got an abscess, or I had an abscess. I'm not sure if I still do or not. That was diagnosed last fall, and it wasn't causing any real discomfort. There was kind of a blister on my gum by the tooth. It's a tooth that has a root canal. And I, at that time, I chose to just manage the infection with antibiotics, and it seemed to do the trick. It settled down. But I'm getting a little more swelling there now. I still don't have any discomfort. And kind of along the lines of what you just ended up talking about, I'd like to save the tooth as long as I can. And I wondered what your thoughts were on that.
Yeah, Bob, you know, and that's actually, unfortunately, a pretty common scenario, is that, you know, teeth maybe have had a lot of work done over the years, and maybe eventually they've had, or somewhere along the way, they've had a root canal. And sometimes some of those root canals will fail over time for a variety of reasons. Probably the most common reason I would say that we see is a fracture of one of the roots. You know, once you've had a root canal, you're generally not going to feel hot or cold on a tooth. You can still develop pain with biting or pressure. You know, the pain that you're noticing periodically is not so much related to the tooth itself, but probably more related to that infection, that abscess that you have. And although it's not maybe giving you symptoms very often, that infection is probably slowly getting worse. And we know eventually it will get much worse. I describe folks those kinds of scenarios as like a little ticking time bomb that's in there, and we don't know when that time bomb is going to go off. And that, you know, there's never a good time for a toothache, but we certainly know that there are some times that are way worse for a toothache than others, right?
Yes.
And so, you know, the issue gets to be is why is that little abscess there? That little blister you comment about that's on the gum, that's the infection that has eroded its way through the gum and is now draining out. And that's obviously not a good thing, although it's not giving you, fortunately, much in the way of symptoms. But the problem inside there is still there. The antibiotics that you took helped it to feel better, kept it under control, but the infection is still there. And so I guess what I would encourage is see your dentist and have them identify, why do we think this is going on? And what are the consequences by me doing nothing and letting it go beyond what I just described, where eventually that little ticking time bomb is going to go off? But what other harm could there be by leaving it there? We know that infection in the body can affect other aspects of our health. You know, we know that heart health, and there are certain other health conditions that can be impacted by our dental health. So an infection that's lingering for an extended period of time can ultimately have an impact on other aspects of our health as well. So it's easy, I know, to kind of let it go because it isn't giving us issues. And I respect that you want to hold on to the tooth, and I admire that because, as I just said, our own tooth is certainly better than a replacement. But that's also assuming that that tooth is healthy and that tooth isn't causing us other risk by leaving it there longer. And my worry for you would be is by leaving it there longer, it may be causing more harm in that area and getting worse. Eventually, it will lead to more symptoms, and that could lead to an even bigger, potentially even life-threatening infection. And I've unfortunately seen some cases like that.
Okay. Well, get that taken care of, Bob. Thanks for the call. We did have someone email in, Phil in Fond du Lac, with kind of a similar problem. And he got a root canal about 11 months ago, but the tooth is still sensitive. And recently, it's even more so. Are there long-term complications that would merit a second root canal or an extraction? Or what should he do?
Yeah, that's a challenging question to answer without being able to see the tooth or especially see an x-ray. But there are times where after a root canal or other dental work where you can have some temporary sensitivity or symptoms. 11 months, I would say, is not typical. It certainly would be something that I would encourage to go back to the dentist that did the root canal for you to have them examine it and see, does it look good? There are a variety of different things that can happen that can lead to ongoing symptoms, like after a root canal. One thing I mentioned earlier, and that's the possibility of a root fracture, and that can cause especially sensitivity like to biting, chewing. And those can be, root fractures can be really difficult to identify because if they're really minor, they may not show up on a regular x-ray. Sometimes there can be an extra root that's on a tooth that maybe didn't get identified initially because it was really hidden. And those are things that the dentist can kind of evaluate and see, why is it that the tooth is still giving symptoms 11 months afterwards?
Mm-hmm. Definitely doesn't sound good. Let's go back to the phones. And we've got Tom waiting for us, and he's in Hazel Green.
Good morning. Hello, doctor.
Good morning.
I have a question related very much to your caller from a couple of calls ago about older fillings. I have several of the older silver, I know it's not silver, but whatever that material is, fillings that are probably 25 to 30 years old now. And about maybe 5-6 years ago, about half of them were replaced at the advice of my dentist because he was worried that that might cause cracking of the tooth being an older material like that. And it was actually a pretty unpleasant experience to get those replaced. And lately now they're suggesting that the remaining ones in there should all be removed and replaced. And I was just wondering if that's something that's a pretty common recommendation, if that's a common concern and, you know, something that should be taken care of.
Yeah, that's what you're describing is a very common question that people ask, even ask me all the time, is, you know, you have some fillings that have been there for a long time. They may not necessarily be giving you any symptoms. you know, what should I do about those old silver fillings? And so what I usually will say is just because they're an old silver filling, and, you know, we commonly use, and you're absolutely right, there isn't silver that's in those. And in amalgam is what we as dentists call those types of filling materials, but we commonly use the word silver fillings. Just because a filling maybe is old does not in and of itself mean that it needs to be replaced. You're going to get a little bit of variability on your dentist on how much wear should there be at a point where we need to be concerned by it. So that part's difficult to answer. But what I would tell you is that silver fillings, the best way I would describe is they're metal. And over time, they're going to corrode. They may chip away or wear away at the edges. And that can now start to create some gapping that can develop between the filling and the tooth. And when that gap starts to develop, that means that stuff, bacteria and plaque, can start to get underneath it. And we start to worry about things like getting decay underneath old fillings, or like as you describe, your dentist described, that where they maybe had some cracking or developed some cracks in the teeth around it. So those are common reasons why we'll start to replace fillings. So my answer back to you would be is for those other fillings is maybe ask the dentist, well, what's going on with those? Why do you think those, you know, do they need to be replaced? Are they showing wear? Maybe the dentist, the office that you're at, maybe they might have an intraoral camera, not an x-ray, but an intraoral camera where they can take some photographs. That's very common in many dental offices now, where they can take a picture of that tooth and of that filling and show you. And they can maybe on that photo show you where these gaps are so you can see kind of for yourself, okay, what's going on with these? I'm sorry to hear that it was an unpleasant experience having those replaced. I certainly would say that shouldn't be a routine experience. But I would ask your dentist, you know, what's going on with those and why is it that he or she has recommended to replace them? And maybe they can get some photographs to be able to show you that also.
Okay, thanks for the question, Tom. Now, before we get too far here, we wanted to make sure that we talk to you a little bit about adult orthodontia. And there's a lot of adults out there that are really considering, you know, getting braces at, you know, when they're older, 50, 40, what have you. What are your thoughts on that? And what should people really be thinking about before they go ahead and do that?
Yeah, we've seen a huge growth in adult orthodontics. I individually do not do traditional brackets and wire orthodontists. I have some wonderful orthodontists that I refer patients to that have that interest. I do provide Invisalign, which many folks have heard of that. It's an alternative to traditional orthodontics. It uses clear aligners that move teeth with the same science that traditional orthodontics moves teeth, but without the brackets and wires. There are pros and cons to both of those options. But going back to what you're describing is that, you know, you mentioned 40, 50, you know, I've had patients that are in their 70s that have had orthodontics. So, you know, you can move teeth at any age.
Okay.
Age may impact how we move teeth. It may impact how long it takes to move teeth, but age is not does not rule you out as far as having orthodontics done. You know, I've had many patients that have crowding, or they don't like the way their teeth look, or the teeth have gotten more crowded or more overbite as they've gotten older, and now they find it's much more difficult to keep their teeth clean. As you might not be surprised, straight teeth are easier to keep clean and therefore easier to keep healthy. Lower chance of decay on straight teeth versus crowded teeth. I would say there's no doubt many adults, it's the aesthetic benefit or the cosmetic benefit is what drives many people to have that interest. But nonetheless, we know that straight teeth are easier to keep clean and therefore easier to keep healthy.
Okay, great. Thank you. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Dave in Oconomowoc with a question.
Yeah, hi. Great show. I mean, how valuable is this? Thanks for it. And so my question, doctor, is I'm wondering if you can help me settle a bet with my girlfriend. I have for the longest time, I have thought, like since a kid, that chewing sugar-free gum helps your teeth. You know, it helps you get little bits and pieces out between your teeth. And I even swear, like 10 years ago, I saw one of these gum manufacturers advertise that it was like American Dental Association recommended. So I've told her, if you can't brush your teeth, chew some gum. It's good. You know, I would say, just to be dramatic, it's as good as brushing. And she's like, oh, you're kidding. No way. So the question is, and you're going to settle this bet for me, is it good? And what are your thoughts about it?
Well, first I should ask how much is on the bet, because yeah. I want 10% of the winnings. No, I'm just kidding. Well, you know what, Dave, you're going to win that bet because you're right. Sugar-free gum, now, it's not as good as brushing. That aspect of it certainly is not. That said, chewing sugar-free gum when you cannot brush is certainly better than nothing at all. And there's a few different reasons for that. You're absolutely right. It can help get some little things out. But the bigger advantage of it is when you chew gum, you increase saliva. And we know that that actually can help counter some of the acid that's in your mouth after you eat certain things. So chewing sugar-free gum certainly is a good thing. Now, that said, there are some people that may have TMJ-type issues. They may have jaw or jaw muscle pains, and it would hurt for them to chew gum. That wouldn't impact most people, but there are some people that find that muscle activity of chewing gum might hurt. So those folks would want to avoid gum chewing. But for most of us, if you can't chew or if you can't brush your teeth, sugar chewing gum can be beneficial, and it's not harmful to the teeth.
Okay.
Not as good as brushing.
Okay. Thanks, Dave. I wonder what that bet is going to be, but he won. Really quickly, before we have to say goodbye, let's talk about, you know, the toothbrushing thing. Are old-fashioned toothbrushes as good as those electric ones that seem to be everywhere?
Yeah, traditional manual toothbrushes are very, very effective. Here's what I would say is the greatest advantage of a powered toothbrush is most powered toothbrushes have a timer. And I do find that people that use the powered toothbrushes that have the timers generally brush longer than people that brush with manual toothbrushes. Most people actually brush much faster than they believe they are. And so the powered brush helps them to brush longer and therefore brushes better. A power brush does brush a little bit better than a manual brush, but I think the length of time is the greatest advantage to it.
So how long should we be brushing our teeth?
Yeah, our goal is 2 minutes, which seems like a long time. Many powered toothbrushes have 30-second timers, and that's meant to be 30 seconds based for each quadrant, you know, or each kind of section. Mm-hmm. So you'd hit that timer, you know, for many brushes, you know, four times, essentially. There are some brushes that have a one-minute timer, and then you'd have 1 minute for the upper, 1 minute for the lower. And if you get through and you're still got time and the timer's still going, then go back and brush things again, because you probably went too fast.
Okay. Hey, excellent. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Teep. Obviously, we could have gone on for another 45 minutes, so I'm sure we'll have you back again soon.
We'd love that. That'd be fine.
All right.
Hope this helped.
Oh, I'm sure it did. We've been talking with Dr. Patrick Teep. He's the immediate past president of the Wisconsin Dental Association and a general dentist with Associated Dentists in Verona. Well, stay with us because next on the Ideas Network, we're going to be talking about face masks with our next guest.